Okay, the second one is, it's a backup to this one. A lot of people, when they answer, is it true? They'll say, yep, it's true. Then when she comes back with, can you absolutely know that it's true? And then a lot of people start thinking about it. She asks more questions, and they'll back off and go, well, no. We can't absolutely know anything, especially about what other people are feeling. So going back to this example of disrespect, I know a lot of people, and I just mentioned that, especially husbands who don't consider themselves being disrespectful and they leave the crap around. So this thought doesn't even occur to them. So thinking that we know another person's mind is folly, and it keeps us from doing the work on our own mind. Now, when our remarks contain extreme reactions like I'm devastated, I'm terrified, I'm outraged, these often aren't really true either. A common technique that therapists use is to get to the foundational truth of what you're feeling. And it usually boils down to, when you get past these extremes, is fear of loss, of love, or positive regard of others, even if you're angry. But it will manifest as something else because we want to cover our vulnerabilities. Look at not only the truth of the situation, but your own true feelings on the situation. Now, if you're not sure if something's true or not that you've written, there's 5 additional statements that she's come up with that can help you bring these true feelings out. The first one is, you can add, and it means that, to a statement you've made to bring out your feelings. So, for example, ask the word disrespect. My children always disrespect me. Then you can add, and it means that I feel alone. In this example, I'll say it. I'll feel alone and unloved by my children. That might bring out the feeling you're really having instead of saying you're outraged. So in this example, anger isn't the real feeling. It's hurt and vulnerability. The second thing you can do is ask what you think would happen if things were the way that you want them. You might say, I would feel loved and appreciated if they picked up after themselves. A third one is, imagine what's the worst that can happen when you write down something you don't want to happen, and then ask if that's true. This is a common technique for reducing stress over events that we can't control. For example, you might say, if you come up with the worst that can happen because of this, you might say, well, I'll be dead and my children will become home or won't clean up after themselves, and then they're going to condemn the house, and then my kids are going to be homeless and die of starvation. Okay, that's the worst that could happen. Now, could that really happen? No. So when you come up with extreme worst case scenarios, it helps put things in perspective. Living with the fear of a negative outcome is often more painful than the actual event. And I'm going to call that wait till your father gets home. It's the fear. It's not the event itself. Okay, the next thing you can do to help bring out feelings is look for shoulds and shouldn'ts if you didn't use them, because it will actually get to your deeper feelings. So if this example just said, my children just leave crap around the house, really doesn't evoke the feeling of my children should clean up after themselves. Because that statement, for example, reveals your expectations, your beliefs, your disappointments. So if you don't know if it's true, put a should in there, because that will often bring out what you're really feeling about the situation. And another way to find the truth is, where's your proof? Apparently in this statement, the proof is they don't disrespect me because they don't pick up after themselves. So bring the evidence and then ask, is that true? That's not that example of proof does not bear fruit because it doesn't prove that they disrespect her just because they don't pick up after themselves. And the other thing is, where's the proof you have to pick up after your kids? Did your family put a gun to your head? No. There's no proof there. Now, going back to these inquiry questions, then the third question is, how do you react when you believe that thought? This is what gets to your feelings, your negative feelings about it. Picture yourself in the situation and see the people or the events that are causing you the stress, and see their reactions and see your reactions. When you're in a stressful situation and you're feeling like you know, you're being reactive and emotional, what do you say when you see yourself in the situation? How do you say it? What's your body language? How are you looking at the people and reacting to them? How are they reacting back to you? What feelings are going on inside of you? With this question, you're going to notice the internal cause and effect, as opposed to just the external cause. This isn't important that the kids aren't picking up at this. It's the feeling of how do you react when this happens. When you believe your negative thoughts, there will be uneasy feelings or stress. And if you realize from the first question that the thought really wasn't true, then you're looking at the power of a lie and the power of your thoughts and what they can do to you and those around you. A following question that she might ask is, can you see a reason to drop that thought? And then she always puts in, and I'm not asking you to drop it, because you can't. And don't even try. Once you see the truth will let, the thought will let you go, not the other way around. A reverse variation on this, she'll ask, can you find one stress-free reason to keep the thought? Now her fourth question is, who would you be without the thought? So now that you admit to the thought, now that you get into your imagination, see how you react in your movie, in your story, now you're moving into the light. Who would you be without the thought? With this question, you imagine yourself not reacting. You're observing. Then imagine who you would be if you couldn't think that thought. How would your life be different? How would you feel without your story? How would people respond to you? Which feels kinder and more peaceful, with your story or without your story? In our example, if you didn't think that you're disrespected just because your kids didn't pick up after themselves, how would you feel? You'd feel calm. You'd have the presence of mind to come up with some options, maybe. I thought of a couple things. If your kids were young, you could tell them calmly and pleasantly to pick up after their stuff before they go out to play or do anything fun. And then you could even make a game out of it and call them vacuum monsters and see who can suck their toys in the fastest. You know, make a game out of it. Another thing, if they're older, I used to do this, you can make a little notation on a chart that they owe you a certain amount of money for every task you did on their behalf. That stops that pretty quick with teenagers who are trying to have enough money available to do fun things. So you can think of other options instead of getting upset. Because when you're upset in the subconscious emotional state, you're not very creative and you kind of shut down. By removing the negative emotional response, which shuts down creativity and engagement in a solution, you get what you aim for without shooting yourself in the foot first. For many people, life without their story is literally unimaginable because they're so attached to them. They don't have a reference for it. When asked, who would you be without the thought? I don't know is a common answer in Katie's experience. The imagination exercise helps us to come up with more positive and effective alternative realities that helps unstick us from these long-held recycled beliefs and gives clarity to understand the situation and act efficiently. We step back from the situation and become the observer of our scripts and then decide if and how we want to rewrite them. Deepak Chopra says, the highest form of intelligence is the ability to observe yourself without negative judgment and attachment. And as you watch yourself, you gain insights. Finally, Katie developed the hardest part of this whole thing, and it's called the turnaround. And this is where the defense mechanisms can kick in. This requires an open mind and heart. In this process, you take what you've written of others and you see if your words are as true or truer when it applies to you. As long as you think the cause of your stress is out there, your problems will never be solved because you're not in your own business and therefore you have no control. You're forever in the role of a victim when you blame the external. Now, this turnaround is done in three steps. And you don't have to believe these. She's not saying when you do this that you have to, some of these can be actually silly. Just open your mind to seeing other options to see if they're as true or truer of you. And if some of these statements are too hard to accept, you can add sometimes and see if that's as true. Or maybe substitute a different, better related word. Okay, and then she says in the list examples. Now there's three steps for the turnaround. You turn it around to yourself first, and I'll just put yourself. You turn around your statements to yourself. For example, when you say, my children disrespect me, they should clean up after themselves, you say, I should clean up after myself. Is this true? Yeah, we all should clean up after themselves. Maybe you're not setting a good example. Or you might say, when you say my children disrespect me, you might say, I don't respect me.
I don't respect them.
Huh?
I don't respect them.
Well, you turned around yourself on the first one. So I don't respect me. Yeah, maybe you don't. Maybe your kids kind of subconsciously pick that up, and so they don't respect you because you don't respect yourself. So you start to get some insights about in the turnaround, how this can apply to be as true or truer for you. Then you turn it around for the person that you're talking about. And that's where Lorraine said, what was your example, Lorraine?
I don't respect them.
So in this projection, then, in this scenario, she doesn't have any respect for the children because they're not cleaning up after themselves. They're making her life harder. They're the cause of her having to do so much work. She's angry at them and probably gaining resentment and has no respect for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's one way. There's several turnarounds. Another turnaround could be, my kids shouldn't pick up after themselves. They shouldn't because they don't. That's reality. So you deal with that first. Accept that first before you go on. Another one is, turnaround is, my kids shouldn't respect me. Why should I expect anybody else to respect me or love me? I can't control that. That's not in my business. My job is to respect and love me. So if you cut out the middleman, you get what you want, right? If you want something that you're not getting, give it to yourself. That way you get exactly what you want.